100% over here. Yeah, 100%. It's Parshas Bamidbar. Then I
back from the car.
The Parshas Bamidbar starts off the following. It says, "The Davar Hashem Moshe Bamidbar Sinai Ba'ol Mo Da'achu B'Chodesh Hasheni B'Shana Hasheni Tzlatesim Eretz Mitzrayim Leimor." So it's Rosh Chodesh Bnei Yisrael Mishpachos and Leis Olsim Mishparshem Os Kozachol Gugolos. You got to count up Bnei Yisrael. So first, we specify the date. We tell you where it happened, when it happened in Mitzrayim Sinai. We tell you exactly when it happened, that Rosh Chodesh year. Then it says what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to count up Bnei Yisrael. Now, it's very strange. We know you count them from 20 to 60. We know Ligul Golosim by their heads and everything like that. Later on, it says, I don't want you to count Bnei Levi. Aleph Perek Aleph Pasuk Memtes says, where's Memtes? Ach, it's Mata Levi Lo Sifko. Don't count up Mata Levi. That's Rosham Lo Sisa. Don't lift up their heads Besoch Bnei Yisrael within Bnei Yisrael. It sounds like, don't count them ever. I know it says the word Besoch Bnei Yisrael, then that clearly, at the end, it means within Bnei Yisrael. Don't count them with Bnei Yisrael. But it sounds like don't count them at all. As if they're not right for counting, we shouldn't go into them whatsoever. But then later on, Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph, it says clearly, when it goes through Eilat told us Moshe Aaron and go everything, in Pasuk Yud Dalet, it's a Vidavar Shal Moshe Bim Barsin Leimor, the code is Bnei Levi, they told us Moshe Bacholsom. Count them up. Count them from a month and over. You know, it's a different type of account. But what was the idea that in the first place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I don't want you counting Bnei Levi, and especially not with Bnei Yisrael. So then he says, all right, count Bnei Levi. What was wrong with Bnei Levi? What was the difference in the count between Bnei Yisrael and Bnei Levi? You could come up with answers to this. But another question, and this will really lead us into what we want to do. Perek Gimel Pasuk Dalet. I know I'm starting from the middle of the parsha, but listen to this. It says, Elish Shmos Bnei Aaron HaKohanim HaMeshul HaMeshul Mil Yadam L'Chayim. These are the names of the sons of Aaron the Kohen and the Kohanim that were anointed that were Mil Yadam. Vayamos Nadav Aviyu Lifnei Hashem. And Nadav and Aviyu died in front of Hashem. Vakrivam Eish Zohar Lifnei Hashem, when they brought a strange party in front of God, Mimbar Sinai and Midbar Sinai, Uvanim Lo HaYolam, they never had children. Vayachayim HaLazor VaYisomar Alpnei Aaron Aviyam. And HaLazor Neitamar became the new Kohanim. I don't understand. We haven't gone through this already? The Korban Samlich Bnei Hashem Vayamusu. Parshmini goes through the whole thing. What exactly happened to them? What, we have to mention it again? We have to go through it again? And Nadav and Aviyu died. First of all, if they died, you don't have to count them in the first place. Don't say Nadav and Aviyu, Allah's a Ritama. I understand you want to go through all the different Kohanim that got Mili as Yadam. And go through the people that had the consecration of the Kohen and they became Kohanim, even though two of them died. I don't understand. If they're dead anyway, and we know they're dead, what are we bothering putting them into the count for? It's as if you would have thought Nadav and Aviyu would be counted. No, they're dead. Why would I have thought that I would counted them? Obviously, they're dead. A very, very, very strange pasuk. Extremely, extremely pasuk. Okay. The Rabbeinu Bechaya has a parish on it. It's not written by Rabbi Shavel. Shavel is the one that wrote on the Rambans.
I think that's even stronger.
Those are of cooks. What?
I was going to say, I think that's even stronger than saying, like, well, we already counted them before. The question is, like, why bother counting them?
Why bother counting them? Yeah, 100%. Like, what's going on over here that we're bringing them in? We're talking about the counting. We're mentioning people that are alive. We're not mentioning people that are dead. I'm like, oh, and there's, you know, Bernie, Yalama Shalom. You know, but then we're not talking about Bernie, Yalama Shalom. We're talking about the people that are clearly alive, not anybody else. So what's going on? So Rabbeinu Bechaya quotes from, I don't know who wrote the parish on the bottom. There's a parish on the bottom of the Rabbeinu Bechaya that says the following. You have to understand how Yibum works. There's extra words in this pasuk. Uvanim lo hayu lahem. They didn't have any children. We're not going to Allah's or any talking about his children. So what do you mean, uvanim lo hayu lahem? They didn't have any children. What are we bothering mentioning that for? There's a concept called Yibum. Yibum is when a person passes away without having any children, then his wife has to have a relationship with the brother-in-law, with her brother-in-law. Now, you could either do Yibum or you could do Chalitza. Chalitza is the whole process. It's a very strange process. Spitting and taking off the shoe and reading Psukim. Nothing to do with Pshat. Absolutely nothing to do with Pshat. It's all something that's just beyond our world. Yibum is being together with them. Mahakim Shemachud B'Yisrael. To bring up the name of his brother among Bnei Yisrael. What is that concept of Yibum? What does that mean? What are you supposed to do? So here's what the notes say down there. It says like this. The purpose is to be mala, to bring up to Shemayim the dead brother's neshama. The one who just passed away, his neshama. He never accomplished pru revu. He never had a zecher in this world. He didn't leave a remembrance, a memory, or anything in this world. The only thing we have is a grave, I guess you could say, with a little thing that says, here lies this guy. That's all he has. He's got nothing else. Because he doesn't have a zecher in this world, because he has nothing left, he stays himself, and he doesn't leave. The neshama of that person who died stays around. And his legacy will be through his neshama. His neshama doesn't allow him to rest. Call that ghosts, whatever you want to call that. It's the idea of the person's neshama not being able to go up to Shemayim until he has some type of a legacy, some type of a reason to go up to Shemayim. So what happens?
What if there's a big Baal Tzedakah?
Even then, he won't get rewarded yet. He's left in this world.
He's only like this building.
That might be a different story. I don't know. It doesn't go into detail. And again, none of this, there will be issues with everything I'm going to say tonight. It's all, when it comes to Kabbalah and we don't know it, you're just not going to understand it. And simply put, it's just not going to be understood as well as it could be. But that's the concept that he brings up for Yibum. It's a Hakim Shaval. So what does the brother do? The brother gets together with this man's wife, and they have a child. And whether or not they name the child after the brother, the point is that child is the dead brother's child, the dead brother's legacy, the dead brother's whatever you want to call it. So now the guy has a legacy in this world, something that follows him, and therefore he can go up to Shemayim in peace. Now he can go back up to Shemayim, and everything is okay, and everything is good. That is called Sod HaEver, the secret behind pregnancy, so to speak, of neshamos coming back down in this world that seemingly have no shaykhus. They say that the dead brother's neshama has a little bit of a spark that goes into that child as well. So it's as if the dead brother is living through, vicariously, through that child that's born, through his brother and his wife. That's what ends up happening over here. When it says, Ubanim lo hayu lahem, that meant that Nadav and Abihu didn't have a legacy, they didn't have any children, no one would remember them. So what did they have? They had neshamos that wouldn't go up to Shemayim. And the neshamos stayed down here and they never left. They didn't go anywhere until Pinchas did the maisa with Zimri. When Pinchas later on runs up against Zimri and kills him with Cusby in front of the tent of wherever it was, in front of the tent of Bnei Shimon, all of a sudden Nadav and Abihu's neshama joined in with Pinchas, and it became part of his neshama. It's one of the reasons why Pinchas ended up becoming Eliyahu HaNavi. Pinchas got Kiddusha from Nadav and Abihu, in which he himself became the neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi. He himself became, Pinchas never died. Pinchas was given a bris by HaKadosh Baruch Hu never to die and to become Eliyahu HaNavi for the rest of his life. That's how great Pinchas became and how great he was all through this concept called Sod HaEver. That concept of Sod HaEver. Is there a real Havamina to count dead people? Shouldn't you draw the line once they die it's all over? Does it make a difference whether the neshamas are down on the earth or not? This is what we're going to get into today. What in the world was this counting? What were they doing? Why were they counting them? And why would you have a Havamina that Nadav and Abihu would possibly be able to be counted? Well, what's happening, which we have to say, no, Nadav and Abihu are not going to be counted. What's going on? This will also explain why Matzah Levi is separate from the rest of Bnei Yisrael. Here's where we go. I'm sorry?
Then do they stop counting by
60? No, 20 to 60 by Bnei Yisrael, and by Levim, it's a month and up. So it's anywhere from a month and up. What? Yeah, I would assume so. As long as death is after the amount of years that you've lived, then yeah, you'd have to assume that they would stop at
60. Oh,
no, 100%. No. It's that, yeah. Without, they don't stop at 60. By Levim, it doesn't stop at 60. Yeah, by Bnei Yisrael, for sure, 20 to 60, for sure. You wouldn't count the people under 20, the people over 60. For sure, you're not going to count the people that are dead. But by Levim, it's a month and up. So in theory, you can help. But still, what does that mean exactly? There's a Maimonidean double to Tzaddik. I don't know if anybody's had a real connection to Tzaddikim before, meaning to really like connect with the Tzaddik and to have a connection and to do something with them. If anybody remembers Ben Kleiman, who came around here once in a while and he went back there to Israel, he had a connection with Rav Noach Weinberg. A connection, a relationship with him. To have a relationship with a gubble does tremendous things. Tremendous things. Forget about the obvious. Forget about the obvious. Forget about the obvious. I'm not going to speak any louder. Forget about the obvious.
Forget about the obvious.
The Milo being Dovuk to Tzadikim is that you can become a Yirei Shamayim by looking at him and fearing him. By being afraid of how to deal with the Tzaddik, of what to do and what not to do, how to act when I'm around him, all of a sudden you understand what it's like to fear God. Because it's not just another person. And it's another Oren dragon, although I am scared of the name dragon. But it's not just another Oren that's around there that I'm scared to see on the street. It's just, with a person that I honestly feel when I'm near, I feel shaky. I feel like I can't talk straight. I feel like when he yells at me, I can't yell back. I can't say anything back. There's nothing. I just take in the Musar and I say, okay, fine, I hear you. Even if I have a reason, I just can't argue back. That's what a Kaddish Baruch Hu should be like to a person. That when God says to you, why did you do this? You don't say, like, well, I overslept. No. You just say, I understand. I did something wrong and I feel bad. Even if you're on the lowest level, the Tzaddik has the ability to bring you up, to help you along, and to help you go to the place that you're supposed to be. But when Lot was together with Avram Avinu, and he was, I guess you could say, he made himself secondary tafel to Avram Avinu, so when Lot would go around and say, Avram Avinu is the Iker, and I'm just, you know, I'm a nobody, I'm not with him, then Avram Avinu was so great, he was able to bring Lot to such a level that both of them would get nevuahs. Not only Avram Avinu, but Lot himself would get a nevuah. But that led Lot to become a Baal Gaiva. Once he became a Baal Gaiva and thought, oh, I could do this on my own, and he left Avram Avinu, or he was in the level where I want to leave Avram Avinu, then a Kaddish Baruch Hu refused to give a nevuah to Avram Avinu. Only when he left, Acharei Pared Lot Meito, then a Kaddish Baruch Hu said, now I'm going to speak to you, Avram Avinu. What do you mean? God spoke to him when Lot was around. Well, it depended what Lot was. If Lot was davuk to a tzaddik and considered himself secondary to the tzaddik, then a Kaddish Baruch Hu would speak to Avram Avinu, just like he would speak to Lot, and he'd even speak to Lot. But when Lot said, I'm just as great as him, then he wasn't davuk to a tzaddik anymore. He's just his own person. There, God said, not only will I not speak to you, I'm not even going to speak to Avram Avinu. Not when this Russia is around. I don't want this Russia anywhere near me. That's the idea behind it. There's a maysa. I can't even explain this maysa with the Chassam Sofer, Rabbi Kiva Eger, and the Nesivis. Rabbi Kiva Eger, his son-in-law, the Chassam Sofer, was with them. They were eating a meal together. And the Nesivis Amishpa came into town. Rabbi Yaakov Melisa came into town. Rabbi Yaakov Melisa came in. Rabbi Kiva Eger said, such a tzaddik. We have to make a party. We have to make a suda for him. So he called in all the Talmidim from the yeshiva. He brought Rabbi Yaakov Melisa, sat him at the front table, and said to the Nesivis, I want you to darshan. Say over the Dvar Torah. Rabbi Yaakov Melisa got up and said over an unbelievable Dvar Torah, the unbelievable Shtekel Torah that went through everything, get this out, everything. And the Rabbi Kiva Eger, after it was all done, all the Talmidim were confused out of any. The Nesivis, speaking out of the words of Torah, and people are confused. He was speaking more toward Rabbi Kiva Eger. Kiva Eger turned to the Chassam Sofer, his son-in-law, and said to the Chassam Sofer, what do you think? What do you think of the divorce? So the Chassam Sofer looked at Rabbi Kiva Eger and said, "Does Rabbi, do you want the honest truth?" Rabbi Kiva Eger said, "Yes." He said, "I have three major problems," and he knocked out the whole Dvar Torah, the whole thing, everything, the whole binyan that the Nesivis was building up. He knocked out the whole thing. He said, "You're wrong about this. You're wrong about this. You're wrong about that." Three things totally knocked him out. So the Nesivis, yeah, he's knocked out. He heard the Chassam Sofer sign and he didn't know what to answer. So Rabbi Kiva Eger saw there was a shamish coming in and out from the kitchen. You know, a guy serving at the table. So Rabbi Kiva Eger turned to the shamish, and he said to the shamish, "Nu, what do you think? What do you think?" The shamish said, "Well, I think the following." And he started speaking. And he answered all three of the Chassam Sofer's tainas, and then gave four rayas for the Nesivis. Four rayas to what the Nesivis was saying. And the Chassam Sofer got up and he said, he slammed his hand down on the table and says, "It's not fair. If my father wanted the walls to talk, he could have made the walls to talk." And the Lublina Rebbe said that the Pshat behind the Maisa is that Rabbi Kiva Eger was on such a level, he was able to put his thoughts, when there was a Talmud who was so davuk to him, he could make that Talmud speak through him. And he could put his thoughts, so to speak, into that Talmud. The Talmud couldn't have paid attention. He wasn't even listening the whole time. He was walking in and out the whole time. The Talmudim that were around there the whole time couldn't pay attention. They couldn't hear what was going on. This Talmud was going in and out. He was going to be able to hear what was going on. It wasn't the Talmud speaking out of himself. It was Rabbi Kiva Eger speaking through the Talmud. The Chassam Sofer embarrassed the Nesivis, so Rabbi Kiva Eger made sure that the Chassam Sofer was embarrassed himself. And he said, "That's what you deserve for having that happen." The Chassam Sofer caught it. And said, "If my father-in-law wanted to have a wall talk, the wall could have talked. Anything could have been there." But the shot is that you can make, if a tzaddik is there, he could bring up the people that are with him to such a level beyond the normal level that he'd ever be able to be at. A level that he wouldn't be able to understand if he wasn't normally there. The shot behind that is the Pasuk Dalet over there. Pasuk Dalet in the beginning of the Parsha. With you they will be, says Hashem to Moshe and Aaron. All the people will be with you. Ish ish lamate. Each man, when they're lamato, when they're down on the ground and they're so far low, ish rosh l'beisavosafu. But if they're with you, they're rosh l'beisavosafu. They'll be the heads of the people up in charge. There'll be a people all the way on top, greater than any other person that's around. Says the Ma'aril, that's the pshat behind the pasuk of ish, ish, lamata, etc. That's the koach of tzaddikim, that we become a better person by being near tzaddikim. See how this goes. Not only can you be double to tzaddikim of this generation, Rebbe Yashiv, let's say, who else is around that we consider an absolute gadol, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, let's bring out, you know, gedolim from all over, Rav Scheinberg, to say that we can be dovek to those gedolim. You can also be dovek, Rav Levine from Chicago, you can be dovek to tzaddikim of previous doros, of previous generations. It's an unbelievable gemara. And the Sota, and everybody always quotes it and says, such a strange gemara. Gemara says that when Rebbe died, Bavla Nivus v'Yuraschet, all in Nivus and Yuraschet was gone in the world. Amar Rav Yosef, the Gemara goes in, Amar Rav Yosef, says, Al tisni anava. Don't say that Anivus has left us, that there's nobody who's still humble. Ti'ikana, because I'm still around. And I'm really humble, so as long as I'm around, humility is still inside this world. The obvious kasha is, you couldn't have said a more guy to take a statement. What in the world is God? How could you have said such a thing? How could a person such an honor? The Gura has the famous answer. You know what the answer is? Anna is a Tana. There's a Tana by the name of Anna. The Ika Anna was referring to the Ika Anna. There's still a Tana who's still around. His name is Anna. He's just as big of an Anna as Rebbe was. It's okay because there's still a person by the name of Anna. It's the gross same answer. This other answer we mentioned over 12 weeks ago that refers to this whole thing. But listen to this answer. The answer that he gives is the following: it says whenever a person has something, he does a certain nida that is the special nida, the unique nida that a certain tzaddik would do, then you pull in the neshama of that tzaddik, so the tzaddik is with you. Even though that tzaddik has passed away, he comes down and he helps you out. Who is the greatest anav of all time? Moshe Rabbeinu. If a person is a pure anav and does it l'shem shemayim, you can, through soda ipper, pull down the neshama, or parts of the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu, into you, so that you yourself have a nitzis of Moshe Rabbeinu within your body. If you're a rhotic sholem, you go after peace, and you chase after peace, and you want everybody to be peaceful with one another, not like Jimmy Carter, like, you know, regular people. If you do that, then you have a nitzot of Aaron HaKohen. You have a nitzot of Aaron HaKohen, because by doing that, you'll become better. Says Perkei Avos. This is the Tefer Shlomo the Radamsker says. Ye beis kod beis ba'ad b'chachamim. Your house should be a meeting place for chachamim. If everybody makes their house a meeting place for chachamim, what are they going to do? The chachamim are going to go to, like, first we'll go to Oren's house, then we'll go to Yaakov's house, then we'll go to Asi's house, oh, we'll keep going everywhere. What does it mean, ye beis kod beis ba'ad b'chachamim? He says, you know what you should do? Make yourself wide open, make yourself open to the point where your body can become a vad for the chachamim of previous doros. That the chachamim need a place to rest, they want to come back down and help people out. If they want, make your body the receptacle for them to be able to be there for you. You can be the makabel so that you do certain things. I'm pure anav, I'm a pure this, I'm a pure that. I start working on myself to the point where those neshamos come down and join me and become part of me. So that I'm not just Tzvi, I'm Tzvi with Moshe and with Aaron and with all the other gedolim that are from the previous doros. And whatever you work so hard in, if you learn a Reb Chaim Brisker, you can bring down Reb Chaim Brisker. If you learn an Or HaChaim, you can bring down the Or HaChaim. If you learn a Gra, you can learn a Gra. You can get the Gra. We're learning a Radamsker. If you're really into it, you can bring down the Tefer Shlomo himself. And that way, it stops you from sinning. Because not you anymore. It's you and the Radamsker. It's you and Moshe Rabbeinu. You're not going to sin when you have Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu won't let you. And once you sin, then they're all gone. Then they all leave. Then they're completely out of it. But until that point, you can have them inside you and you can become a greater person. This whole parsha of Bamidbar is always the parsha before Matan Torah. Every year, there's no way that Bamidbar will not be the parsha before Matan Torah. It's impossible. Nasa is always afterward. Bamidbar is always before. Always happens. Because it's a hakana for Matan Torah. Every Jew is important. We count every Jew. That's one thing. But the pshat is, you know why this whole parsha is about Eta HaChana? Because from the pshat behind this. Rava. Famous Rava. What did Rava do? Rava was sitting on his hands while he was learning once, and he started making himself bleed. Sitting himself so hard that he started making himself bleed. He started bleeding from his fingertips. And a guy saw him and said, what's wrong with you? You're Amad Depriza. You're a crazy nation. You do anything. Rava said, like, if I didn't do this, you wouldn't understand. That's what Nasa Manishma is. Rav Yosef. Same Rav Yosef, as we said before, comes along and says, if not for this day, Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. You make an igla tilsa, you make a huge suda, you make a great meal. Because if not for this day, Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. What does Rav Yosef mean? Who did Rav Yosef bring down within him? It's a great honor. Brought in Moshe Rabbeinu. If not for this day, Shavuos, which is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah, I would have been a nobody. I would have nobody in me. There would be no Moshe Rabbeinu to bring down inside me. Do you know what Rav Yosef is called in Shas? Rabba has a different name. Rav Yosef, you know what he's called? Sinai. You know why he's called Sinai? because he knew all of the Torah. He was an expert in everything. There was Rabba the Oker Harin, the uprooter of mountains. And then, all of a sudden, there was Rav Yosef, Sinai. It's an unbelievable connection. Rav Yosef had that connection with Moshe, and it's the point where he was mamish everything. Now, if you hear this, look at the pasuk. It says, "Su is Rosh Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael L'Mishmol Son Reis Avosam Mi'Yispar Hashem." I want you to count them. Kol Zachor L'Gul Galosam. According to their Gilgulim. Now we know the Torah speaks about Gilgulim. By Reuven's bracha on Parshas Zosa bracha, it says the words in Targum Onkelos. It says, "Umusa Tinyana Lotinus." Moshe Rabbeinu davened about Reuven that he would not die a second time. How do you die a second time? Do you know a lot of people that die twice? I don't know anybody. I think Catwoman might have died nine times. I think she has nine lives. But aside from that, I don't even know if she's real. But if she was, there would be nine times. But twice? Who dies twice? What are we done? You don't have to worry about that. It's not going to happen. The shot is that he shouldn't come back down in this world. He has to die again. The Pasuk speaks about such things about Gilgulim. Such a thing. Here's the issue. When a guy is more than one neshama in his body, Rav Yosef, who had himself and Moshe Rabbeinu and other people around, how many people does he count as? When you count him, how many people does he count as? Is he one? Or is he more than one? Does he count as two? There's another reason. I'm going to find this. I'm going to give you another one. Anybody know when they fought against the Ai? Yoshua went and fought against the Ai. He already defeated Yericho. The second war that they fought was the Ai, Ayin Yud. He fought against the Ai. 36 people died. Does anybody know what Chazal say on that? What Rashi says in Yoshua? Who were the 36 people? What does Chazal say? Anybody remember? It says the 36 people was Ya'ir ben Menashe. Ya'ir ben Menashe was equal to 36 of Bnei Yisrael. What does that mean? So says the Tfar Shlomo, it means he had 35 other neshamos with his neshama. Ya'ir ben Menashe was such a gadol and did so many unbelievable traits, so many great things, he was able to bring down onto him 35 other neshamos to the point where he counted as 36 different people. He was completely 36 different people. It happens throughout. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu was equal to... Anybody know? Moshe Rabbeinu was equal to 600,000 of Bnei Yisrael. You know what Pshat is? Because he had a nitzus, the spark of every neshama of Klal Yisrael. We know there's 600,000 letters in the Torah, 600,000 neshamos. He knew the entire Torah, which meant he had every single nitzus, every neshama that came down to Klal Yisrael. He had everything. So if you counted most of it, and you said, you don't count one, you count 600,000. He counts as 600,000 people by himself. He counts as that. If you would count Ya'ir ben Menashe, he doesn't count as one. He counts as 36. Now, Ya'ir ben Menashe happened to be over 200 years old. So that was okay. When you're 200 years old, you're not counted from 20 to 60. Therefore, even though you're counting the Gul Galosim by the Gilgulim, you wouldn't count Ya'ir ben Menashe. Ya'ir ben Menashe was too old. But he would have, if he would have been in the count, he would have been counted as 36. That's what it is. Yeah. And the Shema of one of those people. Again, the way we're going right now is that these Gilgulim came from previous Doros, from Tzaddikim of previous generations that they brought back down to time of dead people that came around. That's
dangerous to say
that. Oh, hold on. You're going to get... Oh, I know where the danger comes in. Don't worry. The danger will be averted. Don't worry. Danger will all be averted. I feel like that danger is around, you know, from...
Yeah.
What's that?
Robinson.
Well, yeah, they're very good. Very good. That. Yeah, 100%. Okay. Don't worry. I know.
When by ATS and China, there were 600,000 Jews that came out...
That's exactly what his question is. Don't, danger. Hold on. Wait until the end. Anybody who leaves now is mom's going to be a kofer. Don't leave now. You don't want to leave now. Don't worry about this.
That's what they
We're
going to
answer.
That's like the proof.
Moshe.
Oh, 600,000 people heard.
No, Moshe and Aaron. Bidatka had to count them. There was no one else in Kleisel who was allowed to count. Then Nesiim helped them. But no one else in Kleisel were allowed to count. Only Moshe and Aaron. Why? Because only Moshe and Aaron could count those Gilgulim. There's no one else who could look at a person and find those Gilgulim and count it. They would look at a person and they would say, one. What? They count each person. Obviously not allowed to do that. That was usher. But you can't count a person just like that. But he would only be able to see. But Moshe and Aaron could look at the person and see how many neshamos were with them. When they would hand over a coin, they could find on that coin how many neshamos have given over this coin. And one coin could count as 20. One coin could count as 30. One coin could count as many people as you want. Here we go. This is going to be unbelievable. very, very strange. If you count up all the Shvatim of Klal Yisrael, aside from Menashe and Ephraim, which were from one Shevet, from Yosef of Tzadik, Menashe and Ephraim were a little bit smaller, but the smallest Shevet is Binyamin. Binyamin had 35,400 people between the ages of 20 and 60. That's the smallest. 35,000 is the smallest. Menashe is a little bit less, but because Menashe and Ephraim are from Yosef, so I'm counting them together as one. So then they were actually the biggest Shevet. They were the biggest Shevet. But it's 35,400. The Torah. I sometimes use it. I usually don't, but once in a while I get it. I think it actually. Bnei Binyamin. This is Pukudiyam Lati Binyamin Chamishu Shloshim Elav Arba Meos. So the other ones I was just guessing, but this one, this idea, but it does say them all. Then comes Shevet Levi. Altogether, how many people are there in Shevet Levi? 22,000 from the age of 1 month and up. In next week's parsha, it says altogether from the age of 20 to 50. It's a little bit less, but 20 to 50. How many people were there from Shevet Levi? 8,580. That's a huge discrepancy between Shevet Levi and every other Shevet in Klal Yisrael. I mean, you're not even coming close. You're not even coming close. 8,580 to 34,500? It's not even close. It's not even near one another. Why? What's up?
What is it now? Where is it coming? It's one third of the
rest of
the
whole
area. Even less.
No, but hold on. No, but one Shevet is
34,500.
It's also one Shevet. It should be equal. It should be roughly
around 30,000.
What is it now, though?
No, because they've revolved.
Let's go into this. You have 8,000 versus 600,000. Right. 600,000 divided by 8,000 is not even, it's not a proportion. It's one out of 95 people is a lady. What in the world is that? What happened to Shevet Levi? Why did it become so small? So I'm going to go back to our questions in a second and your problems. Don't worry, I'm going to go back to those in a second. But first we have to understand what in the world happened to Shevet Levi. They don't equal anywhere near the other numbers of Bnei Yisrael. So the Gemara says the Arun was Machalabah. They carried the Arun Kodesh, and a lot of people did not have the proper respect for the Arun Kodesh, and therefore they were killed. But that makes no sense. This is the first of Iyar in the year 2449. They hadn't started carrying the Arun yet. They hadn't started carrying it yet. That's what the Gemara asks, and the Gemara answers the Aron was Machalaban. But that, it doesn't apply by this count. That applies for the last count in the 40th year, why the Levium were so far off. But this count, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So what do you say? How in the world did this happen? So the Ramban gives two answers. He says, Kasher Ya'anu Oso, King Yerbevachin Yifrotz. When they afflicted them in Mitzrayim, that's how they became bigger. Says the Ramban, if they didn't afflict them, then they didn't become bigger. So there was a bracha for the rest of Klal Yisrael that they became so much more, and they had six children per birth and everything and this like that. They had all these kids because why? Because they were afflicted. But Shevet Levi never worked. Because they never worked in Mitzrayim, they never had the numbers. So how much was Shevet Levi?
Little bit Shevet. Little itty bitty Shevet.
It was a tiny little Shevet because that's all they were. Okay, I hear that. Number two was the cast of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu never gave a bracha to Levi. And he was angry at them. And he cursed their anger. So because he cursed their anger, that means that their anger, the anger of Yaakov, you know, caused them to have small numbers. Those are the two answers of the Ramban. The Or HaChaim has bomb caches in the Ramban. Bomb caches in the Ramban. First of all, number one, regarding number one. But the Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu saw 600,000 of his own children. He saw tons, even if it wasn't 600,000, it was an exorbitant number. From 70, they went to an exorbitant number before Yaakov Avinu died. Even 600,000 can't be taken literally. They went to a huge number before Yaakov Avinu died. So I don't understand. If they saw that many that quickly, they weren't in Inu yet when Yaakov Avinu was alive. Nobody says that they served the Mitzrayim at that point. It was later on, either 86 years before they left, 116 years before they left, whatever it was. But nobody says that when Yaakov Avinu was alive, they were under the Inui of Mitzrayim. So why did that Puravu so quickly? So why did they get that bracha? That's number one. Number two, the cast of Yaakov Avinu. What about Shevet Shimon? Shevet Shimon was also cursed by Yaakov Avinu. They had great numbers, 59,000 over here. So what's the problem? I don't understand. Well, what could you, if they have 59,000 people, Shevet Levi was 1/6 of the size of Shevet Shimon? How could that be? What? No, 100%. But Shevet Shimon should have had the same issue as Shevet Levi. If you're saying the only reason why their numbers are so small is because they were cursed, Shevet Shimon should have also had that curse. Shimon and Levi were cursed by Yaakov Avinu. So why wouldn't they have that curse? So that's what he says also in Divrei Yamin, by the way. After they came into Eretz Yisrael, there were 38,000 Levim between the ages of 30 and 50. What happened to the anger of Yaakov Avinu? Nowadays, one out of every, maybe let's say five or, I don't know what it would be, one out of every six or seven Jews is a Levi, whatever it is, it's a good number. What happened to the curse of Yaakovim? Yaakovim's curse should have said, well, I only want a certain amount of Levim, and that would have been it. So what happened to the curse? That's Or HaChaim's answer. So he gives another tarot. He says, Bnei Yisrael were slaves, and they kept their honor. They kept their honor. They had no sheikhs. They never, ever wanted. They couldn't imagine having children that were going to later on be killed. They couldn't imagine ditching their kids in the middle of a field or throwing them into a river in a teva to pass them all the way down. They couldn't even imagine that. Yocheved, it was a different story. She had a nevuah that she had to give birth to a kid. But Sheva Levi was like a band of princes. You wouldn't do that. I'm not going to give birth to a kid who's going to be killed later on. So what did they do? They refused to be together with their wives. Amram divorced his wife. The rest of Bnei Yisrael stayed married. It was Amram and the Levim that got divorced. Amram and the Levim that refused to be together. And even though Amram returned, that was through the Nebuah of Miriam. Without the Nebuah of Miriam, he never would have gotten back together with Yocheved. The other people, who says they got back together? It's a miracle that they had 8,580 Levim. Why should they have even had that amount? All the Levim separated from the wives, says the Or HaChaim. They went away from all the wives, and they didn't want to have any sheikhs with them whatsoever. It could even be, I have an answer as well, couldn't even be there were Ben Azaz. If all they were doing was learning all day long, they weren't working, they weren't doing it out, they were just learning, they started to love their learning so much, who says they were together with their wives? Kamash, the Raya is from Amram and Yocheved themselves. How many kids did they have? Three? Why only three? And they were 3 years apart, each one of them. 3 years apart, each one of them, Miriam to Aaron, from Aaron to Moshe. And that's it. No other kids. How could you only have three kids? Oh, I'm a Kayim, the mitzvah, according to Beis Hillel. Wait, can you do that nowadays? I mean, people don't do that. Look at the house. The one of the Rebbeim there has like 16, 17 kids. Can you do it? Yes, you can. Avadi, you can. Without a question, there are Atarim and this and that and the other. But do you think Bnei Levi would have done that? Bnei Levi was just learning all day long. So, I mean, those people are usually the people that have the most kids. So, what's the Shabbat and Amram? Must be that they mamish separated. They were together with the wives once in a while. Once in a while, and very, very infrequently, enough so that they didn't have any kids from them. Okay, we have another tarot. According to what we just said, and now we're going to answer up everything. It says it's very Shlomo. They weren't Meshadid. They were tremendous people. They weren't Avodim. They were tremendous people who sat and learned Torah all day long. Through their Torah learning and everything that they did, they were able to pull down onto themselves Neshamos from Shemayim. Crazy amounts of neshamos, that each person from Shevet Levi was equal to many other people from Bnei Yisrael. Many people. Each Levi, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu was equal to 600,000 people from Bnei Yisrael. Amram was equal to whatever it is. And every person in Shevet Levi were tremendous in the amount that they were complete. They were just unbelievable amounts of neshamos within them. Unbelievable amounts of neshamos within them. Says it's for Shlomo, their numbers were low so that they would be connected all of Bnei Yisrael. The rest of Bnei Yisrael, the Shlokim had 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people. They could only have 8,000, and each of their neshamos was comprised of four or five neshamos each. That in actuality, if you would count them, Moshe and Aaron would count Shevet Levi, they would count them as 5, 6, 4, 3, 5. And you would go around counting them as more than what they actually are. So their numbers would still equal up to 35,000 neshamos altogether. Not 35,000 people, it's 8,580 people, or 22,000 Levim altogether from a month and up, but the people that were learning would count as more than what they actually were. Now we can get to an unbelievable thing. Later they lost that milah. They lost that milah, and later on they became the same numbers as Klal Yisrael. Physically, they became 30,000. Why? Because they weren't as great as they once were. All of Bnei Yisrael was learning in the Midbar. They had Milah Shem Elai, they were tremendous people, but they didn't have that milah anymore where they were so high they were just like everybody else. That's why they were separate in the counting. Bnei Yisrael was counted L'gul Golosim, by their Gilgulim. People were counted according to how many Gilgulim they had. By Shevet Levi, that would have caused a massive problem. If they would have been counted that way, they would have been counted in a strange way by their Gilgul and by the amounts of neshamos that they had, then you wouldn't have 8,580. It wouldn't be a physical number. It would be a number that's like 35,000. And when somebody would look at Shevet Levi and say, there's 35,000 people there, the only people who would have known, who would have realized and been able to say, yeah, it is, were Moshe and Aaron. Because only Moshe Aaron could see that. Nobody else was able to see the amount of neshamas that Sheva Levi had. So Sheva Levi was separate from Bnei Yisrael. They were able to be counted by their Gilgulim. Because there was no person between the ages of 20 and 60 that was alive there that actually had more than one neshama to them. So it was a regular count. And Moshe and Aaron were sure of that. And that's why only Moshe and Aaron counted. Because then Joshua ben Nun, for sure he counts as like six people. For sure he has other neshamas in him, but he didn't. For sure Kalev ben Yefunah, but he didn't. And other people did not. But Shevet Levi did. So when it comes to Bnei Yisrael, they were counted Legul Gelosam. They were counted by their Gogulim, and it happened to be that each one of them was equal to one. And how do I know that? Because what was Moshe Rabbeinu equal to? 600,000 of Bnei Yisrael. So you see that they were all individuals, because he was equal to every single one, and we know that has to be true, because each one of them represented a certain letter in the Torah, and every person was individual regarding that Indian. But Shevet Levi, totally different. Mate Levi, Lotit Kod Bisok Bnei Yisrael. You can't count them with Bnei Yisrael. It's not the same type of counting. It doesn't mention Legul Golosim when they count the Levium. Legul Golosim is surprisingly missing. Because you don't count Bnei Levi that way. You're counting them physically by the numbers that they are, and that's what makes them inherently different from Bnei Yisrael. That's why there's a Hava Minhag to count Nadav and Avihu. Because Nadav and Avihu's Neshamos were there. They hadn't applied yet to Pinchas. This is how we started off the whole shir. Nadav and Avihu are mentioned in the Parsha. Ki'ilu, like, we would have counted Nadav and Avihu, but they're dead. But they died. There's nothing we can do. What does that mean? You know what the pshat is? I had a half of me to count them because their neshamos were around. And Moshe Rabbeinu was into counting neshamos of Shevet, of the people. Is that what I thought? Maybe you should. Says that Kadosh Baruch Hu. No! By Shevet Levi, you don't count that way. By Shevet Levi, it's a different counting. Keep them away from Bnei Yisrael. That's a physical counting. And therefore, don't count Nadav and Avihu. I know you want to. Don't count Nadav and Avihu within the rest of Bnei Yisrael. That's the idea behind it. Okay. I'm going to take questions on that. That's a big vort. That's a big vort. And I understand where the questions come from. The questions will be, well, how do you know these numbers are correct? Because you'll look at it and you'll be like, well, maybe they just counted the neshamos and they go there. Listen, we have pshat, and then we have drush and remez and sod. This is not sod, because then I wouldn't be able to understand it. This is a remez dika drush. A remez dika drush. That the neshamos were counted, and then that's the pshat behind the drush behind the Legul Golosim. A remez behind the Legul Golosim. But that's not pshat in the pasuk. Pshat in the pasuk is there were 600,000 people from Bnei Yisrael, there's 8,580 people in Bnei Levi, and the pasuk is just telling you that Nadav and Avihu were also, but they died, they counted within the Kohanim, but they died, and everything was all over. But that's, we're not dealing with pshat right now. We were dealing in remez, pure remez, absolutely pure remez, with a little bit of drush mixed in. And that's why we went through that board. But that's the difference between the word the Googles and everything else. Now, you might ask me for a board for Shabbos. Because that, you're for sure not saying over to Shabbos, Daniel. So when you ask me for a board for Shabbos, I'm going to tell you another one. I'm just going to add on the Shemi Shmuel at the very end. What's the point of counting Bnei Yisrael now? So the Zohar mentions in the beginning of the Parsha, the Shemi Shmuel quotes it, says when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they went to a war in the desert. Who is the war against? The Satan. The Satan loves the desert, a wasteland, a middle of nowhere. Satan loves it. And the Satan was trying, he was waiting for Bnei Yisrael to come out of Mitzrayim so he could knock them down, so he could destroy them and say, oh, now I'm going to get them. Now I'm going to get Bnei Yisrael. He was waiting for that chance. He stood there and he said, I can't wait until that happens. So he's waiting for them. Bnei Yisrael, their job to go in the Midbar was to knock down the Sultan, to daven and to learn, and to not let the Sultan influence them in any way, shape, or form. Now that's hard. Bnei Yisrael, just like anybody who goes to war, needed a bit of a pep rally. So what do you do? What do you do before Bnei Yisrael went to war? The Kohen HaMashuach would get up and he'd make a big speech. He'd get up and he'd say, everybody, don't let your hearts waver. Don't anybody who has a sin go home. Everything should be, well, we're going to win this war. Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us. The Kohen Mishul would get up and do that. Why? Because you don't have that pep rally. You're not going to go. Can you imagine? I just heard the Lakers-Denver game. On my way here, I heard about a minute of it. It was just dark. Can you imagine if right before the Lakers game, Phil Jackson gets up there and be like, all right, guys, just do what you want. I'll see you guys soon. Yeah. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to be raring to go. No, you need like a pep rally. You need a little, you know, that little thing. You need a little, we're going to do this. You know, the screaming out loud. It gets you all into it and says like, oh, I'm ready. In Israel, we're not confident. They were at Har Sinai, but they saw what the Sultan could do with the eagle. And when they were entering inside the desert, they were scared out of their minds. Scared out of their minds. What's this Satan going to do to us? So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He gave them a pep rally by counting them and showing them that each one of you is worth counting. Each one of you means something. And your mitzvahs, every person should look at themselves as if their mitzvah is going to be machriya the olam. The whole world would be destroyed except AY did a mitzvah. All of a sudden he did a mitzvah, everything's all good and the whole world survives on him. And if you do an avera, the whole world deserves to be destroyed. That's what he told them. Each one of you is so kedai. Don't think, well, who am I? I'm just one of 600,000 people. No, you're one. You're two. You're three. You all count as something within Klal Yisrael. So Hashem told Moshe, and this happens before anything. Anytime that a Kodesh Baruch wanted to count in Yisrael, it's always regarding this in you. To make them bring up their spirits, don't worry. You still are somebody after the Eagle Azog. Right over here, toward the end when they were about to fight in Eretz Yisrael. They were going up against the 31 nations in Eretz Canaan, and they were scared. What are we going to do? Hashem said, don't worry. One, two, three, and he started counting them. David HaMelech, before they went to war, counted them the wrong way. But one, two, three, went around and started counting them. Because the point behind accounting, says the Shem Yishmol, is to bring up every person and understand, you are to die. You're worth being here. And then you'll have the self-confidence to go into the midborn and destroy the sucker. And destroy the sucker. And they did that. There was part of the door that died. But for 39 years, they didn't do one sin. It's tremendous effort. There's never been a time where 39 years, no sins occurred. Tremendous effort. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them, each one their own self-worth, to be able to be there. So that's important that you can say over Shabbos. The point of counting is to give you self confidence. The first verse, I would say, if your annals of history, save it until when we're all doing Gilgulim together, then we'll figure it out. But the second verse, you can say over Shabbos. Have a good Shabbos, guys.